the third part in our To the Ends of the Earth documentary series on the Irish military diaspora in South America focuses on the life of the liberator of Chile, Bernardo O'Higgins. Bernardo O'Higgins was born on August 20, 1778 in Chillán, Chile, the illegitimate son of Irishman Ambrose O'Higgins and Isabella Raquel May, a young girl from a prominent Creole family. Author and member of the O'Higgins Institute in Santiago de Chile, Sergio Martín Baez, through interpreter Rodrigo Pardo, gives us the background to Bernardo's birth.
Ambrose O'Higgins, in his trips to Santiago, they go to Chillán and meet Isabel Riquelme. Ambrosio, well, he was with Isabel and Bernardo was born, but Ambrosio is more important for him, his career, than a family. No reconoció a, he didn't recognize his child, and they named Bernardo Riquelme. He's acted like an absent father, but he sent it to the school and here in Chile and then in Lima and then in Spain and in England.
Dr. James O'Higgins Norman expands on this point.
As far as I know, Bernardo O'Higgins, he never actually met his father, Ambrose O'Higgins. His father provided for his education and for his comfortable life in an honourable way, but actually had never had a personal relationship with him at all. And he was actually raised under his mother's name and didn't adopt his father's name until his father died in 1801.
When Bernardo was 2 years old, Isabella married Don Felix Rodriguez and gave birth to a daughter, Rosaria Rodriguez Raquelme. Bernardo spent his early life with his mother in Chillán. Claudia Mariela Alvarez Chavez, of the very popular and extremely lively Casa O'Higgins Museum in central Lima, takes up the story.
When Bernardo was 12, his father, Ambrosio, had Bernardo's education in Lima. Bernardo studied 5 years in the Colegio Real San Carlos. When he lived in Peru when he was 12, he has como un protector, Ignacio Blake. Ignacio Blake was Irish too. He was best friends to Ambrosio O'Higgins. And when Ambrosio decided my son live in Peru, Ignacio Blake take care of Bernardo.
As Bernardo turned from boy to man, his illegitimate status became problematic. Sergio Martín Baez explains.
No lo consigue, entonces lo manda a Inglaterra a estudiar comercio.
Ambrosio, he wants that Bernardo came to the army, in the Royal Army, but he has to be, you know, a legitimate son.
Claro.
So he can't get that one. So, well, they sent it to England. Lo enviaron a Inglaterra. They sent it to England to start with the marketing business study.
Dr. James O'Higgins Norman describes how Bernardo's European education helped shape his thinking.
He was educated at Richmond in London and Spain for education. And while he was in Spain, he came across people like San Martin and was exposed to ideas of nationalism and republicanism for the colonies in Spain. And so these ideas were kind of began to be introduced to his mind. I kind of wonder myself about how committed he would have been to those ideas if he had have been allowed to inherit his father's titles. His initial reaction in 1801, he was still quite young. The movement towards an independence in Chile really hadn't started. And his father dies, and the first thing he does is inherit his father's surname, apply for permission to use the title Marquis of Osorno and Baron de Valonor, and these were turned down. It says something about him that he applied to the King of Spain to use the noble titles in the family, that he obviously valued that. And then he's turned down, he's told you can't use those titles, probably because he was illegitimate. And then he goes and becomes a farmer and gets involved in local politics in his local commune and whatever. And then the rest is history. But I wonder how dedicated was he to the nationalist and republican cause if he was applying for those titles in 1801, and maybe he didn't see a contradiction in that himself. We'll never know.
Either way, Bernardo's behaviour was causing a headache for his father, Ambrose.
Que no reconoció nunca, porque él creía que había perdido el virreinato porque estaba metido.
Ambrosio was very upset because Bernardo was a revolutionary, making a real problem in Spain. A fellow called De La Cruz told him to kick out Bernardo. He died very angry.
Bernardo planned to leave Spain and return to Chile in 1800. But his ship was forced to turn back as Britain battled with Spain and France in the high seas. A serious bout of yellow fever further held up his plans, and he eventually returned to Chile in 1802. Bernardo's father, Ambrose, died in 1801 in Lima, leaving his son his estate in La Laja, near Los Angeles in Chile. Sergio Martín Baez takes up the story.
Ambrosio died. Ambrosio leave a fortune to Bernardo Riquelme, a whole farm and lands, cows, horses. He was one of the richest men in Chile. Bernardo get the O'Higgins, the last name.
Bernardo busied himself with life as a gentleman farmer, involved himself in local politics, and was elected to the Cabildo in Chillán as a delegate for La Laja, a position that by time saw him visit Santiago. Sergio Martín Baez expands on this.
Bernardo came to Santiago in 1810 and started the process of emancipation. All this meeting, gathering.
Changes in the political landscape in Europe would once again dictate events in South America. In 1808, Ferdinand VII was deposed as King of Spain by the French, and Joseph Bonaparte replaced him as leader of the country and its vast empire. Those in South America felt no allegiance to the new, predominantly French rulers in Spain. On September 18, 1810, Criollo leaders in Chile revolted, and a legitimate self-government under the government junta of Chile was established. They were still generally loyal to the Spanish crown. But with time and developments in Europe, patriots like O'Higgins and McKenna moved closer to the notion of full independence from Spain. Authorities in Spain were not prepared to stand idly by and lose control of South America. In August 1814, backed by the reinstated King Ferdinand VII, under the command of Mariano Azorio, Spain's Talavera regiment arrived in Chile to quash any threat of rebellion. The patriots, a fairly disparate group with various aims and allegiances, came together to resist what they perceived to be an invasion of their country. As we heard in our documentary on Juan McKenna, there was huge animosity between some of the main players on Chile's political stage, most notably between the Carrera family and McKenna O'Higgins and the José San Martín group. There were a number of reasons for this, but the main bone of contention was differences in their political objectives. The Carrera faction wanted to create an independent Chile, while O'Higgins, McKenna and San Martín wanted to establish Simón Bolívar's vision of a strong united South America, similar to the state of affairs in North America. This had a devastating effect on the ability of the insurrectionists to operate in an efficient manner. What happened at the Battle of Rancagua illustrates this. Under orders from Peru, Mariano Azorio moved towards Santiago with a view to finally conquering the Patriots. O'Higgins and the Carreras came together with a common goal of defeating the Spanish forces before they reached the city of Santiago. José Miguel Carrera, foremost of the group, decided to stay in Santiago, while Bernardo Higgins rode south to join Carrera's brothers, Luis and Juan José, on the battlefield. The initial plan was that Luis Carrera would attack Azorio's men as they crossed the Cachapola River. But Azorio did not cross where the Patriots had expected, avoided Luis's men and marched on the city of Rancagua. Carrera's brother Juan José and his men were guarding the entrance to the city, But overwhelmed by the size of the Spanish army, they fled into the town and prepared to make their stand there. O'Higgins was faced with two choices: join with Lewis as he and his forces fled to Santiago, or stay and support Juan José and his men in defence of the city of Rancagua. True to his nature, Bernardo chose the latter. The Patriots were hopelessly outnumbered. O'Higgins set about organising the defences of the city, ordering Mark's men to prime positions on rooftops and barricading streets. O'Higgins placed cannons and armaments where they could inflict most damage on the advancing Spanish forces. He put lookouts in the church steeple and hung the Chilean flag from rooftops, claiming the city of Rancagua for the Patriots. The battle ensued on the morning of October the 1st, 1814. The fighting was fierce and the forces engaged in hand-to-hand combat. But despite all the odds, the Patriots managed to push the mighty Spanish army back three times, and as night approached, the Spanish troops retreated. The situation was dire for the Patriots. They were out of water and low on ammunition. O'Higgins sent runners out to implore the remnants of those under Luis Carrera's charge to come to their aid. As the morning of October 2nd dawned, the church lookout saw Luis Carrera and his men advancing towards the town. This is what the rebels needed for victory, as Osorio's troops would now be trapped between two Patriot groups. But at the last minute, Carrera pulled his men and retreated, leaving his brother, Juan José, O'Higgins and their men the impossible task of defending Rancagua alone. Osorio attacked and the onslaught began. The Patriots fought gallantly, but by midday Rancagua's streets were strewn with corpses. It was clear that they had lost the battle. O'Higgins ordered that they abandon the city and attempted to lead 500 of his men to safety. But hopelessly outnumbered, less than half his men survived. Juan José Carrera also managed to escape. Following the Patriot retreat, Spanish forces were furious. They had lost in the region of 1,000 men, the Patriots about 600. Spanish and royalists took their revenge out on the citizens of Rancagua, murdering, raping and destroying all in their path. O'Higgins made his way to Santiago, only to find that it had been José Miguel Carrera who had called off reinforcements in their hour of need. The defeat at Rancagua was significant. The Patriot army was totally in disarray and unable to defend the capital, Santiago. Chile was once again in Spanish hands. Patriot leaders made the arduous trek across the Andes to Argentina. They took refuge in the city of Mendoza, where they rested, planned and rebuilt their army. In 1817, the Army of the Andes, under the command of Bernardo Higgins and José San Martín, returned to Chile to finally lead the country to freedom. During most of 1817 and the beginning of 1818, O'Higgins was based in Concepción. And as we hear from Sergio Martín Baez, battles were not the only thing occupying Bernardo's mind.
When Bernardo, he was in Concepción, met this girl, Rosario Puga.
Rosario Puga, que era casada. Yeah.
She was a married woman, and she gets pregnant, and Bernardo, he do the same deal that his father
con ella tiene un
did
hijo.
To him.
Tampoco lleva el apellido Higgins, originalmente.
He get the name Pedro Demetrio Higgins Puga.
Chile proclaimed itself an independent republic on February the 12th, 1818. But again, political infighting comes to the fore, as Sergio Martín Baez explains.
Finally, Bernardo met José Miguel Carrera face to face in a started like kind of struggle. San Martín, a friend of Bernardo, not Carrera.
Viene después entonces el cruce de la cordillera.
With the San Martín help.
Gente de Mendoza. Y O'Higgins asume como director supremo de Chile.
O'Higgins assumed a prime director supremo title.
The Battle of Maipú on April the 5th, 1818 was the final nail in the coffin of Spanish rule. The Patriots inflicted huge losses on Spanish forces with the death of 2,000 Spaniards and 3,000 captured. It was the last battle in the war for independence. But freedom brought its own demands. Dr. James O'Higgins Norman explains.
He wrote a constitution that focused on issues of equality and opportunity for ordinary people. And I think he had an empathy with ordinary people. You know, he had been somebody who had to figure out who he was himself growing up because of his father's position and because of being born outside of marriage and whatever. And I think he had an empathy with people, ordinary people, and that came through in the policies that he tried to introduce. And to this day, the Chilean state exists because of some of those founding principles that Bernardo and his colleagues brought into play when they were in power. Being such a reformer, Bernardo brought in a lot of changes to Chilean society very quickly. He challenged the power of the church. He declared all religions to be equal. He nullified the position and the status of the nobility. He brought in education for everyone, including the poor and ordinary people. And he established a constitution that was kind of what we would say by today's standards, democratic and republican. He also recognised the importance of needing outside validation for the state and established diplomatic relations with the United States at the time. So all of that, you know, was extremely important and was introduced very quickly. But as you can imagine, as a result of that, he made a lot of enemies, particularly in the old establishment of the church, the Roman Catholic Church, and the among the aristocrats and the nobility in Chile, which ultimately led to his downfall. When he was removed from office, and rather than being killed and murdered, as tends to happen to these guys when they finish in office in those times, they knew they couldn't do that because he was held in such high regard by the people. So he was allowed to leave the country, and his original intention, and most people don't know this, was to actually go to Ireland and to settle in Ireland, the land of his ancestors. Because we know from his archives that he had a lot of correspondence with family in Ireland. And when he got off ship in Peru to change ships and go on to Ireland, they pressed upon him to stay.
Bernardo's story doesn't end with his resignation from office in Santiago. His influence continued from his exile in Lima. Michael Russell of the Irish Consulate in Lima continues the story.
He ran into problems with but he was a bit of an iron man, but at that time they needed an iron man to keep the country together and to prevent them from being reconquered by Spain. But at the same time, he had an idea to bring democracy down from the aristocracy down to the middle class. And that was when he got into a lot of trouble. And it looked like it was going to be a big civil war. And to his credit, other than having a civil war for power, because that was not his goal, he decided that he would abdicate. And the Peruvian government gave him two properties in Cañete, which is about 220 kilometers south of here, as well as this lovely house that we're in. And he brought his son, his mother, and his half-sister, who actually took his name. Her original name was Rodriguez. In 1820, a fleet from Chile under the Lord Cochrane, and in fact the lead frigate was called Fregata O'Higgins in his honor, which Lord Cochrane sailed and landed with San Martin in Pisco for the independence. The first fleet, and then again he funded another second invasion as well, which became more successful. And then on 28th of July 1821, Peru proclaimed independence. They marched from Pisco to Lima, San Martin did, and proclaimed independence. But this would not have been possible without not only the financial help, but the actual ships that were donated by O'Higgins in order to do this. So Peru does well remember him. Well, he never fought in Peru. He was instrumental in the main part of providing the ships and the financing for the independence of Peru. It was a bit of self-interest from a very practical one, because he knew, Peru was like India was the jewel in the crown. And he knew as long as Peru was not independent, the Spanish would keep coming to invade. And so if the best thing for him was to have an independent Peru, Chile wouldn't be invaded.
Claudia Mariela Alvarez Chavez tells us of Bernardo's reaction to his new circumstances in Lima.
Historians said when Bernardo came in 1823 in this house, Bernardo was emocionado because the house is big, it's a mansion, no? And Bernardo looked around, the big el patio grande, los salones, ¿no? Y Lima is characteristic. You can see many church. When Bernardo came to Lima, the bells sound, and Bernardo felt astonished.
The independence of Peru was a major achievement for the region. At a banquet in Lima to celebrate the victory, Bernardo made the following toast to Bolivar.
Señor, America is free. From now on, General O'Higgins does not exist. I am only Bernardo O'Higgins, a private citizen. After Ayacucho, my American mission is over.
In Lima, O'Higgins turned his attention to Ireland, and the following extracts from a letter dated 26th of July 1830, written by Bernardo to Sir John Doyle, gives an interesting insight into the O'Higgins' view on Irish emigration. The letter refers to earlier correspondence between Bernardo and Colonel Arthur Goodall Wavell in Mexico, which alludes to his father Ambrose's plans to colonise new territories with Irish nationals.
In our correspondence, I have only concerned myself with the Irish colonisation of the south of Chile. But once this is completed, I would say that northern Mexico could also be considered. Regions like California, Chihuahua, New Mexico and Texas. I wrote to my friend Colonel Wavell, who was in that country on a mission to which I had appointed him when I directed Chile's destiny. In said letter, I told him of my father's plans and the possibility that the north of Mexico be populated by Irish Catholics. Regarding Mexico's leaders, I also believe I will receive total approval, as they will understand the importance of a colonization comprising such industrious and brave people, who would also reinforce the extensive frontier of that nation against the traps of Russians and North Americans.
The Chilean government reappointed Bernardo O'Higgins to his old rank of Captain General of the Chilean Army. In 1842, the National Congress of Chile overwhelmingly voted to allow O'Higgins to return to Chile. But the reprieve came too late, and after travelling to Callao to embark for Chile, O'Higgins took ill and was deemed too weak to travel. He reluctantly returned to Lima, where on the 24th of October 1842, Bernardo O'Higgins died, aged 64. So what does Michael Russell believe Bernardo's legacy to be?
A lot of people don't realise Chile was the first country under his leadership to free slaves in Spanish America. Maybe they didn't have to make, but he freed them. And he had more democratic ideas. I think the other thing a lot of people don't know is that he was the first man to bring the iron plough to South America, and a lot of other techniques that he learned at his time in London. And he says his time in Britain. However, he also was very much concerned about Ireland and the flight of Ireland. He was very concerned about the Irish, and never forgot his Irish roots. So he was a pretty great man, and a pretty wide man, because he was a writer, a poet, a military man, which was not his natural profession. His farming was his first love, and of course an agricultural innovator. So he'll be remembered. Of course, he's one of the reasons why Peru became independent.
What does Dr. James O'Higgins Norman believe Bernardo's legacy to be?
Bernardo O'Higgins was really ahead of his time. He was somebody who saw the importance of equality. As an educationalist myself, I really value what he tried to do in education in Chile. He introduced a method whereby mass education could be provided across the country to people who would previously not have been educated. And I think that's an amazing legacy. And to this day in Chile, you see the results of that, that is, Chileans value education, and that they, like the Irish, have a very advanced education system that can be traced all the way back to his introduction of education when he was the head of state. And he ultimately died in Peru. But his legacy is definitely one of democracy and equality in Chilean society to this day. I'd like to think that his descendants and people who look up to him would have been on the side of that in recent times in Chile, on the side of democracy and equality.
What does Sergio Martín Báez think Bernardo Higgins' legacy is?
Pedro Demetrio take care of all that business in Peru. When O'Higgins died, he left all the lands, all the wealth in Peru, in the south of Peru, to his son. Pedro Demetrio, the grandson of Ambrosio and son of Bernardo, was a very good politician. He made a lot of achievements in politics. Demetrio would get the marble stone from Italy, and he sent it to make this cascade for Bernardo. Bernardo Higgins is the father of this country because he reorganized the whole thing. He made the battles, the war, and with the San Martin help, and he wants a lot of battles. Bernardo Higgins is the father of Chile. He was important because of that.
As in the case of his father Ambrose, there is a second theory regarding a legacy. Claudia Mariela Alvarez Chavez explains.
Bernardo never married, and everybody knows have one child, Demetrio. Mucha descendencia in Cañete. It's a province near Lima, but there are documents and information about the possible Bernardo have a daughter here in Peru.
Initially, Bernardo was buried in Peru. In 1869, his body was exhumed and repatriated to his beloved Chile. Bernardo Higgins' remains lie in the spectacular cask commissioned for him by his son, Pedro Demetri, at the beautiful altar de la Patria, the crypt of the Liberator, in front of the Palacio de la Moneda, Santiago, Chile. We would like to thank everyone who made this programme possible. In next week's programme, we make the amazing journey from Foxford County, Mayo to Buenos Aires when we look at the life of Admiral William Brown, the founder of the Argentinian Navy.
The quotes in today's programme were read by Declan Cahill. The To the End of the Earth documentary series is produced by Enda M. Roach for Near FM and is supported by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Fund.